Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
A federal court of appeals has recently ruled that a cross on public property violates the U.S. Constitution First Amendment Establishment Clause provision. We're going to be talking about this case on Faith and Freedom. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me is Holly Mead, the director of communications for Liberty Counsel. This ruling involves a 40-foot tall cross. It's called the Bladensburg Cross. Stands on a highway median right outside of Washington, D.C. It has been there since 1925, and it has been erected for those many years as a memorial to the fallen U.S. soldiers of World War I. And now, Holly, a lawsuit was filed against it. The Federal Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, which is headquartered in Richmond, Virginia, said the cross, quote, equates to government sponsorship of a particular religion, close quote. The problem is that this, they say, violates the First Amendment and it must come down. Hopefully, this case goes to the U.S. Supreme Court and the Supreme Court reverses the decision.
You know, I get so tired of hearing about the separation of church and state. I think it's really important that we educate people what it really means and what Thomas Jefferson meant when he established the separation between church and state. Was it not to protect the church from the state?
Well, right? Going back, first of all, Thomas Jefferson had zero role in the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even around. He was in France at the time. So he had no input, no debates, zero. No influence at all on the drafting of the First Amendment. It wasn't until he became president that he ultimately responded to the Danbury Baptist with regards to a letter in which the issue was, and sometimes he used these letters, kind of like as Donald Trump uses Twitter to communicate with the media. Back then, Twitter didn't exist, so President Jefferson used letters. When people wrote him, he would use this letter as basically a way to make a policy statement.
Right.
And so he wrote back to them. They were thanking him and congratulating him for being the president. The Danbury Baptists were concerned about state-established religions because they were a minority religion. Mm-hmm. And in some of the states which had established religions, long after the First Amendment was adopted, people had to be forced to participate in that particular state's religion. So, for example, they might have to pay some of their money to support that state religion, whether it's Anglican, Episcopalian, whatever it might be. So the Danbury Baptists were thankful that President Jefferson was the president, and they wanted to basically encourage him not to use his role to push the federal government onto religion or churches. And so he wrote back, and the letter is very clear what his intent was. It was he used the letter to address the issue of nationally sponsored prayer. His predecessors, George Washington and John Adams, they ultimately did these national days of prayer and fasting. President Jefferson, as president, felt that that was beyond the authority of the chief executive of the United States. Why? Because the First Amendment says Congress, meaning the federal government, Congress, the legislative body, cannot establish a religion. So if Congress cannot force a national day of prayer on the individual states, then Jefferson only has the authority to enforce what Congress does. So if Congress can't enact such a provision, Jefferson can't enforce such a provision. So he was using it as a way to justify why, during his presidency, he was different than Washington and Adams, and he would not declare a national day of fasting and prayer. So he used this phrase, separation of church and state. Now, to understand what he meant with that, there's a couple of things. Number one, he never used that phrase before, and he never used it again. So it wasn't a big issue to him. Two, if you go back and look at his writings, he comments on the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution in the Bill of Rights. The 10th Amendment says, whatever the Constitution has not given to the states or to the federal government remains the authority of the states. He goes on to say that it is a general description, a catch-all provision, of what we didn't give to the federal government remains the power of the states, like the First Amendment is a specific restriction of what we didn't give to the federal government, namely the ability to establish religion. That is on the state level. That's the right of the states.
Right.
Then when you look at his role as a legislator in Virginia, what did he do there? As a state, states were permitted to establish religions. States were permitted under the First Amendment to have national days of fasting and prayer. So as a member of the Virginia Assembly, he actually sponsored a bill for a state day of fasting and prayer, but he went further. Holly, this is amazing. He actually included in the bill a penalty for clergy if they failed to abide by that day of fasting and prayer. So he not only felt that it was permissible to do that on a state level, but he also felt it was permissible to enact a punishment if the clergy didn't follow suit.
Wow.
Now, that's Thomas Jefferson. That's the separation of church and state letter. And what ultimately happened is that bill that he proposed did not pass. Virginia, however, did have state days of fasting and prayer, but they did not penalize clergy if they chose not to participate in it.
But we hear this phrase, especially from this atheist organization, so often now. Are they not taking it out of context?
Well,
that was a great history lesson, by the way.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It was taken out of context by a United States Supreme Court decision years ago. And one of the justices ultimately said that Jefferson had an influential role in the drafting and adoption of the First Amendment, and he used that letter to the Danbury Baptists as a shorthand phrase to what the First Amendment means. Well, he was wrong on two fronts. History, no historian will ever support that Supreme Court decision, because that justice, that whole panel that affirmed that decision was wrong. They were historically wrong. Jefferson had no role in it, and that is crystal clear now. No one debates that. And number two, that letter, since he had no role, can't be a shorthand phrase for the First Amendment. When you come after the fact and you have a little phrase that you only use once and never use it again, and then when you see what he said in his other writings, it doesn't have anything to do with it. He was basically just giving one point. As a federal leader, the CEO, the President of the United States, I cannot force the states to do something that Congress has no authority over.
Mm-hmm.
Congress has no authority over the states in the matter of religion. That is a state issue. States are free to do what that state wants to through their elected officials and their state constitutions. The federal government said the federal government has no authority in that. Leave that issue to the states. And that's what Jefferson was doing. Bottom line is here.
Like in the issue of this cross, though, you hear that phrase again.
You hear the phrase again. It's unfortunate. It's just a terrible distortion of history and the law and the cases. And so now you have this cross. The question is, 1925, this thing has been there since 1925 as a memorial to our fallen U.S. soldiers from World War I. The question is, has it established a religion? Has it even tended to establish a religion?
It's a memorial.
It's a memorial. I mean, crosses are something that you have if you go to Arlington Cemetery.
Right.
You've got on the tombstones, you've got crosses, you've got Stars of David. You have these images that do not establish a religion. This cross as a memorial is not anywhere near establishing a religion. Now, I know one of the judges on the case was distressed by this decision and ultimately wrote that, in fact, didn't feel that this was the right decision, but unfortunately felt that this was the direction that the court had to go because of the Supreme Court muddying the waters. Well, that may be enough for the Supreme Court to take this case and clear it up. And frankly, the Supreme Court has muddied the waters, but even under the Supreme Court's precedents, which are quite messy, by the way, by the Supreme Court's own making, I don't believe that this would fall under the Supreme Court's precedent. So we'll continue to keep you informed. This is just one of those issues where some common sense, people scratch their head. How do courts do this? Well, the problem is that they don't follow the actual intent of the Constitution. One good thing is that President Donald Trump has nominated a list of judges that, by and large, are originalists. They're going to adhere to the original understanding and intent of the Constitution and the statutes that he or she is interpreting. Go to Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org, lc.org. Pray for Liberty Counsel. Support Liberty Counsel with your tax-deductible contributions and learn more about us at our website, lc.org.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org, where you can obtain email alerts and other information to keep you informed and involved. The website again, lc.org. You can also call us at 407-875-1776. Again, that phone number, 407-875-1776. Become an active partner of Liberty Counsel and make a difference in your community and across the nation. lc.org.